what would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might wanna stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
The night when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Hello and welcome to St. John Forward Radio. We're live Monday night, 9 o'clock. I mean, I guess if you're listening to it live, you're aware of what time it currently is. But message out there for all of you people not listening to it live. You could be. It's every Monday night from 9 till 10. I'm here at local FM, 107.3 FM if you're in the St. John area. Broadcasting live out. It's also streaming on my Facebook and my YouTube, John Forward Comedy, if you want to check it out there. Or maybe you're listening to good old-fashioned audio just on the radio, or the audio podcast version at johnforward.podbean.com. Speaking of johnforward.podbean.com has quite a back catalog. I've gone through various iterations of recording things. Anyway, if you want to go back into the archives, the H to the C podcast starts way back in 2011. Unfortunately, the H to the C archives for the ongoing radio show that was happening here in St. John and for a little while concurrently, separate version when I was going to school in Fredericton. Well, the H to the C St. Johners kept it going here. That first 10 years of content between 2001, that's a weird way to say it, 2001 and 2011 is lost to the ages. There's a couple of pre-recorded things that we had done floating around. I've got one like Christmas special burned on a CDR somewhere in my house. I think I've played it on in this current version of the show at some point if it was over Christmas and I was too lazy to come in. But anyway, that's where we're at. I don't know if I still am or not, because comedy is illegal, but I guess technically I'm a comedian. Not a terribly funny show most of the time here. I don't know. Once things cool off and maybe I'll make more of an effort to bring some guests in, the funniness happens a little bit more with the banter than when I'm talking to myself alone in a lonely studio on a Monday night at a mostly empty university. But anyway, this is the show. I'm trying to keep my spirits high, but I'm not in great mood today, or for the past several days. It's just an accumulation of things. I mean, this is our first full week back into basically a lockdown, only without the being able to stay at home, getting high, and reading economics books all day, like in the OG 2020 lockdown. So that's depressing. Can't go to the movies. I haven't done stand-up since, I don't know, probably No Jokes Barred in December, whenever that was. I think it was December 19th, so it's been a little bit over a month. Yeah, obviously no social gatherings. We, Brian Arif and I did my other podcast, Four Story Walk Up, last week, so that was fun. That's a much funnier podcast than this one. That one, yeah. So anyway, if you're a fan of the 5% of St. John Forward Radio that elicits a mild chuckle, you'll definitely like Four Story Walk Up. So that can be found, where's that? That's also on Facebook and YouTube. look up Four Story Walk Up, all spelled out. Also, fourstorywalkup.podbean.com. I'm not one of the original members of that podcast, so unfortunately I'm only in episodes as far back, I don't know, sometime over 2020. I started doing that. I don't talk about it as much on this show. There was a brief window where I was super ambitious and I was cutting together clips to put out. I've gotten lazy, so that doesn't happen. So you have to listen to full episodes. Yeah, I don't promote that enough on this show. So anyway, if you're a fan enough of mine to trudge through me attempting to say smart things about the world, check out the dumb funny version of that podcast. So that's one that I started with other fellow comedians Arif Hussein and Brian Godso. When I was sometime while I was laid off during the original lockdown, so I started doing those as kind of a temporary. I said, you know what, when I get back to work, I don't know if I'm going to have time to do two podcasts. It was so much fun, I kept it up. So that's still going on. It's not as regular. We're on a sort of a bi-weekly schedule. Depends. We've got to work around, COVID and kids and all that kind of jazz. So you can check that out. But, haven't been out of the house much other than to go to work and the grocery store. I think that's about it. Yeah, the weather's been miserable. It's been cold and snowy, and this past week might have been my worst week of work that I've ever had in my entire life. Just nothing but kicks in the teeth every single day. Not literally, of course. I can't get into it in very much detail because, you know, I'm a professional person and I'm not going to spill too much tea about what's going on, but it's just been a disaster. Some combination of, I'm very short on workers these days. A bunch of people have hurt themselves both on and off the job. We've got, the effects of this current level 3 lockdown have, certainly played a role in some of it. That's one significant thing that has kind of screwed me over in the past week. A couple of people just generally, behaving wildly unprofessionally and, I don't know. It's not fun, especially being in charge. I like working for a nonprofit, and I feel like I'm giving something back to the community, but getting more and more and more and more fed up with the day-to-day of the whole thing. The whole thing's just miserable. We run with very little resources, so the moment that any problem crops up, everything kind of becomes that much harder. But I have had a whole heap of separate, unrelated problems all come up at once, and it's just been absolutely miserable. And being the manager puts me in a position where certainly everyone above me is doing what they can, but as the manager, the highest level of middle management available in the province of New Brunswick, I am unfortunately the only one that isn't really allowed even a moment of, you know what, I don't care. I just can't half-ass my job. I don't know if that's just my personality type where I'd almost rather quit and walk out the door than not do my job right. There's certain aspects of it that can kind of fall by the wayside as needed. But I kind of, I've got to be, I'm kind of the one left holding the bag for if anybody else screws up or just decides not to do their job. I'm the one that's got to kind of be responsible for it. That's kind of the worst part about being being a manager. It's just, I don't know what it's like in a different scenario than I'm currently in, but it's not fun. And I don't know. I long for the days of having a job where my boss says, John, here are the tasks that you need to accomplish. Here is your deadline. And I can just sit down and I can do my own work. When we get into this business where I'm responsible for making sure other people do their work, not fun. Particularly if the people that I'm trying to get to do their work have little to no investment in their job and could at any moment be like, you know what, never mind, and then just walk away. So that's kind of difficult. I feel like being a manager would be easier in a situation where, you know, people had an interest in keeping their job. But anyway, that's all I've got to say about that. What else is depressing? I mean, people just keep dying over and over again. I mean, that's going to happen anyway, but it just feels like more. And, you know, I don't talk about all of them. I don't have a whole lot to say about Betty White. I liked her fine. She was old. Meatloaf died since last week. The singer / I don't know, the singer, is that the best way to describe what Meatloaf is? I'm not going to pretend that I'm like a huge Meatloaf fan, but there was a bit of a Meatloaf milestone in my life that I guess I'll talk about in a little bit. Bat Out of Hell 2 came out in 93, I think. I was born in 82, so I was 11 years old. And the song I Would Do Anything for Love But I Won't Do That, that was in heavy rotation. I'm not going to play the whole thing because we're not supposed to play hits here, and this is a pretty monster hit, but anyway, there's a little taste. For love, but I won't do that. Anyway, that song. So that was a gigantic monster hit, and I was 11 years old and I was just kind of getting into music, I guess. I was starting to kind of develop a taste. I think prior to that, the only music I really listened to was probably Weird Al. I think I had a CD compilation of what was that show? The Hit Zone? Something? With Tarzan Dan? Fellow Canadians about my age know what I'm talking about. Basically just like a compilation of the big hits that were on, like, was that Much Music? That might have been on YTV. I have no idea. So yeah, and like Dance Mix, 92, 93 also, that was my time. So I'd hear stuff on the radio, but I was also kind of this is about the age where I start digging through dad's cassette tapes. Mine was never a vinyl household. I don't think we had a record player in the house when I was younger. I think I remember my dad had like a stereo system, but I don't remember there ever being records. So, speaking of which, I played a little bit of like a Nightmare on Elm Street record that I found last week, and it was atrocious. I kind of took a look through the vinyl library that we have here at the station, and it's not great. There's like one wall of them, but it's been so picked over the years. I don't know if people have been stealing the good stuff or if they sold the good ones to free up space for a fundraiser or something, but I kind of took a quick look through and didn't recognize anything. The only stuff that jumped out that I even had any bit of recognition for was they had a George Jones album, which I'm not super, I'm familiar, I know who George Jones is, and he's kind of old school country. I don't think it's the kind of country that I like, but I haven't really dug too far into it. What else was there? I think there was another like similar country album that was out there, but for the most part, I didn't see anything I recognized. But 93 was the perfect meatloaf storm for me. I was 11 years old. I Would Do Anything for Love from Bat Out of Hell 2. I was completely unfamiliar with Bat Out of Hell Part 1. That was all over the radio. I don't remember which order any of this happened, but I remember it being super big. And Meatloaf was the first concert that I ever went to. It was at, what's it now? I think now it's called TD Station. It was Harbor Station back then. I think this was shortly after our big local arena here in St. John opened. I remember the first concert that they had there was Aerosmith, and I didn't go to that one. Meatloaf was the first one that I went to. I went with my mom and I think my sister. And it was a rocking good time. I remember thoroughly enjoying it. I remember I mentioned this in one of my stand-up bits, but I remember there's a point, and I'm going to use some language here. I'm quoting the dearly departed Meatloaf, so it's required. I'm going to say a bad word. You've been prepared. You've been warned, I mean, so prepare yourself. I remember at one point Meatloaf, like in between songs, this was about halfway through, he was just kind of like, I thought I was in St. John's, and everybody booed because we're dummies like that. We get very upset about people confusing us with St. John's, Newfoundland. But I think Meat was aware of the situation, so he kind of had a heel turn there. He's like, I thought we were in St. John's, but this must be St. John, because St. John can fucking sing! And everybody went crazy. It was quite the moment. Yeah, so I don't remember if I got into listening to Meatloaf before or after the concert. Probably a little of both, but I remember digging out Dad's tape and listening to it and really enjoying it. It was a little bit, there was a little bit of an edge to it, which sounds funny in retrospect, particularly the I Would Do Anything for Love. This is very kind of fancy pants theatery stuff. I mean, he's a very unconventional rock star, Meatloaf was. Lots of frilly shirts, and he's a big guy. I watched a Behind the Music or some kind of a documentary about him years ago, and there's some other guy that was a big part of the writing and stuff on Bat Out of Hell, and I don't even remember that guy's name, and I'm aware that he exists, but most people don't even know that much. But I remember liking the music was really cool, I thought. What really got my engine going at 11 years old was there was some coarse language used in some of the songs, which just the idea of somebody swearing into a microphone and recording that for other people to listen to was just such a novelty to me. That might have been the first album that I heard that had swearing in it. Yeah, it wasn't back in those days. I would have been, I mean, like the top 40 compilation that I mentioned, I was into like Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer and Snow at the time, like the old school rap, but most of that was pretty clean. So I think Meatloaf Bat Out of Hell 2 might have been the edgiest album that I had heard up until that point. I used to, whenever we had a school dance, which when I was in junior high school, our school dance was something that like we did in the afternoon on a school day. It wasn't, anyway, I would, in the cafeteria, I would go and I would always request like deep cuts from Meatloaf from Bat Out of Hell 2, like knowing that there were swear words in it. So yeah, I was super into that album. I think like 94, 95 is when I started getting into like the more like alternative rock stuff. I'd kind of missed the boat on Nirvana. But I got super into like Bush X and Soundgarden, Super Unknown. I remember getting the Foo Fighters' first album for Christmas whenever that came out. I think it was 94. That was the situation where my friends were all talking about it, and I had in my head, like, I was a little, I'd kind of asked for it because everybody else was talking about it, but I didn't really know. And I was thinking, like, in my head, I was picturing like Foo Fighters or like death metal band, and I was worried that I was going to get the CD and it was going to be too heavy for me. I remember getting it, and it was the appropriate amount of heavy. So when I started getting into that kind of music, like the mid-90s alternative rock stuff, Meatloaf dropped off my radar a little bit. I remember getting a Christmas gift from my dad. I don't know when that came out. I'm going to guess 95-ish. It was another Meatloaf album called Welcome to the Neighborhood that I took a skim through the track listing, and I didn't recognize any of the songs. I don't think there was any big hits off that one. So, but yeah, I just, that's a funny moment because, you know, parents trying to get what their kids into. And so just to go from like in 1993, like I loved Meatloaf. I was listening to it all the time. It was my first concert. I was requesting it at school dances. And then not too much longer, just the disappointment that I'm sure was on my face when I opened up this kind of off-brand Meatloaf album that I'd never heard of. I don't even think I listened to it for like 6 months. I think at some point I put it on just to say that I did, and it didn't really do anything for me. I should revisit that one. I might be more appreciative of it now. So anyway, I went through a bit of a Meatloaf kick. I was not familiar with he was in Rocky Horror. I only saw that for the first time this past summer. Way overrated. It was, I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be an amazing movie, but it was just, it was not fun to watch. Didn't like it. And most disappointing of all is that the music kind of sucks. Time Warp, everybody knows that one. That's a solid tune. It's not really my thing, but you know, I can see the appeal of it. All of the other songs, utterly forgettable. I think Meatloaf has a song on there that was okay. Meatloaf was in Fight Club, I remember that. He had large bosoms, which was confusing to me around, that was like 99, so. I liked big bosoms. They were attached to Meatloaf, though, so that was confusing for a young boy. I remember he was in the second season of, there's this TV series called Masters of Horror, and basically a bunch of these master directors of horror movies. I mean, some of them were less masterful than others. It was a bit of a stretch for some of them. They needed to find 12 people. There was two seasons of it, and the way that it works is each director is given, like, a certain budget, and they're to create kind of a whatever they want, like an hour long self-contained short film. So there was movies by like Toby Hooper, who did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Wes Craven didn't do one. Who else was on there? Takashi Miike, a Japanese guy that I'm into. John Carpenter, Stuart Gordon, Joe Dante, Dario Argento, most famous for the original Suspiria. I forget what his episode, I don't know if he had an episode in season one or not. I think he did, but Meatloaf starred in a season two episode called Pelts. And I don't remember what it was about, but I remember there's a scene with Meatloaf just running around after having like had his torso skin removed. So anyway, I have a vague recollection of that. Wanted to play a Meatloaf song. I kind of There's one that's not one of the singles that kind of stood out at me, and I was looking at it, and I'm like, oh man, this song is like 8 minutes long. Maybe I should play something else. But like most of Meat Loaf's songs, the good ones anyway, are between like 8 and 10 minutes. So I think it's going to be worth the 8 minutes. We're at 9:25, so I'll throw in a station ID right now and remind you that you're listening to Local 107.3 FM on your dial. And right now, I'm going to play Life is a Lemon and I Want My Money Back, which is a nice fitting tribute to Meat Loaf, and it's kind of how I'm feeling right now, so... Anyway, let's check this out. It is 8 minutes long. Skip ahead if you're not listening live and you're not into it, but give it a chance. This song is a banger. I really like it. So anyway, Meat Loaf on St. John Forward Radio.
We'll be right back.
life is a lemon, and I want my money back. Thank you, Meatloaf. I really like that song. I haven't listened to it in a while. That might be one of... That's not, like... That's on the greatest hits. I don't know if it was a single or not. I really like that song. I might like that. I mean, the biggest hit is I Would Do Anything for Love. I definitely... That's not one of my favorite Meatloaf songs. It's pretty corny ballad. I love the guitar riff on that. It's kind of heavy. I mean, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, a pretty classic song. What else has he got? I don't even know. But Life is a Lemon is one of my favorites, if not the favorite. So we're back here on the show. We're still in the COVID situation. We're still at level 3. Our benevolent leader, Blaine Higgs, says they still think they'll be going back to level 2 on January 30th, which I hope they do. I'm not really sure what the justification for it was. I mean, the trigger point to go from level 2 to level 3 was 100 hospitalizations. That has kind of sort of leveled off and gone up a little bit. We're at like 115 now. I mean, I do not want them to extend it any further than it should be, but I mean, if any of this was truly about safety and the greater good, I mean, and if this stuff was like effective, should be when we get down below 100, then we go back to the appropriate level, but they don't seem to want to like tie themselves to any particular thing. Even, I mean, I'm confused by it even when the thing, even like when I want, when it works out in my favor. I mean, like over the summer when they decided to lift the restrictions, that was supposed to be if we hit like 75% vaccinated, and we were at like 74, and they were like, close enough, which good enough for me. But I mean, if any of this is necessary, they're not doing a great job selling it. So I was trying to do some research before the show. I mean, certainly the breaking point is that our healthcare system sucks. The hospitals are being overwhelmed, they say. I mean, I'm sure they are. There's like 400 hospital staff that are home isolating because they caught COVID, which, I mean, how good are the protocols working? I mean, if a mask and sanitizing and social distancing and all that stuff doesn't work when you're in contact with people with COVID, it doesn't work. So anyway, and I understand that people that work in a hospital are coming into proximity with a lot of COVID patients. So the problem is compounded. I am not entirely sure what the situation is if you go into the hospital with COVID. I don't know how sick you need to be for them to be like, you need to stay here. They've started breaking down how many people actually are in the hospital because of COVID and how many people are there that happen to have tested positive. Right now, 74 out of the 131 people, okay, I said 115 earlier. It's wrong. It's 131. 74 of those people, so more than half, were in the hospital for reasons other than COVID. It doesn't break down how many of those 74 caught COVID in the hospital and are now sick with COVID, or if these people are all asymptomatic aside from whatever other reason that they're in for. So, I mean, I'm glad that they're at least acknowledging that not everybody who they're calling a COVID hospitalization is there because they're super sick with COVID. I would like to further break down that 74, how many of them have no symptoms at all and are there for, like, to get their tonsils out or whatever. I don't know what people go to the hospital for. So that, and I think even if you go in like with a broken leg, and you test positive for COVID, even if you don't have symptoms, I think they still need to like isolate the patients and jump through all sorts of hoops. So regardless of how they got to the hospital, I understand that if they test positive, that requires more resources than the average person. But I would like to break that down a little bit further, but that information is probably not going to be coming unless it's convenient for the narrative. So yeah, I'm surprised that the hospitalizations are as bad, but again, I'm not sure how much the number is being juiced by these other people that just happen to be testing positive that are in the hospital. We're at like 86% capacity in general for our hospitals. We're at 88% capacity for ICUs. Trying to figure out what normal occupancy is for the hospital is not easy. Based on what I've looked up, and if you have better information, feel free to pass it along. Normal capacity for a hospital is between like 75 and 85%. I mean, hospitals aren't sitting empty. That's the target. So, I mean, we're slightly above the upper end of that estimate. I mean, so anyway, it doesn't take much to overwhelm the hospitals because they suck. Nobody's being treated. Again, maybe this is just the Joe Rogan misinformation, but I mean, in the States, it seems like when you go to your doctor and you have COVID, they've got a few things they can throw at you. But that does not seem to be the case in this country. So how many of those people wouldn't have had to go to the hospital if they were given various unmentionable treatments that exist? That, again, I don't know. I'm not a medical doctor. I did find one thing. I forget to set it up ahead of time, but I was looking at, I found some website that showed like a graph of how many hospital beds were available like per 1,000 people in Canada. And if you're not seeing this, this isn't going to make a lot of sense. But basically, like, the top end of the graph kind of in, like, between 1970 and 1985, it was pretty well flat. We had in 70, we had 7 beds per 1,000 people. And then by 85, it had dipped down slightly to 6.8 beds. And then after 85, there's a pretty sharp decline. And right now, at least according to this one site that I looked at, we're down from 7 beds per 1,000 people 40 years ago. We're down to like 2.5 beds per 1,000 people. Now, I want to blame our socialized medical care for that. I'm sure that played a role. That would be a stronger argument if, like, 1971, we've got free healthcare and then immediately it tanks. I mean, it took like 15 years for the bureaucracy to sink in. Maybe something else happened in 1985. I have not looked too far in this. I know our healthcare has gotten worse over time. I also know that we've been spending more and more of it over time. So just like any government program, anything, I mean, name me one really free market capitalist enterprise that over time gets more expensive and less good and needs to still convince you to voluntarily buy these products. Doesn't really happen. Government stuff, though, price, well, I mean, we aren't paying it directly. It's coming out of tax money and whatever money that they decide to print so that they don't need to raise taxes and make everybody upset. They just create inflation. But yeah, it seems the healthcare budget has steadily increased over time. When people complain about slashing budgets and stuff, that usually means that the increase has been slightly less than the previous increases, but it's still, especially when you're accounting for inflation. I found a few graphs. There was one that was like from Wikipedia, and there's one from some other website that I never heard of. So, I mean, I saw zero graphs that showed a drop in funding. So if that exists, please pass it along and I will correct my thinking. But anyway, that's what sucks. I don't know. I think Dictator Higgs is looking for an excuse to ease up on the restrictions because people are getting more and more fed up with the whole thing. And I mean, the mask is starting to slip, literally and figuratively. So I think they would like an excuse, but I don't think they're quite prepared to be like, you know what? Hashtag done with COVID. That's happening in many places around the world, which makes our situation that much more depressing. I forgot to mention this last week, but Britain decided to get rid of their vaccine passports and mandates. I haven't looked at the British numbers. I assume they're doing better than we are right now, but who knows? So that's the situation. I'm waiting for that to happen. We had a brief window over the summer, and then in the fall, cases started going up again, and they caved and went back into vaccine passports and mask mandates. While on the subject, I don't know what this network is or anything, but you know, I saw this video on Twitter of somebody, some British university student, just having a moment. I'm gonna be honest, I got a little bit choked up watching this, but anyway, let's just watch the clip and I'll be right back.
Obviously this comes as a brilliant bit of happiness for me. I don't actually think I can stop smiling when I'm talking. It's about time. Obviously, you just said earlier, the one that makes me the happiest is the face masks in schools. There was zero evidence for those face masks to be in schools. There have been studies that show that because of the types of face masks that we, because I'm going to say we, because I was in schools when all of these policies were enacted, the face masks that we would have are not medical grade face masks, therefore they would make no difference to transmission. But what I found out when I was in the classroom, and most commentators have never been able to speak on this because they quite frankly didn't experience it, so you can hear it from me the first. There were teachers that were sitting there that would, you know, be yelling at the poor year sevens about their face masks more than they would be teaching them. Those shy kids that would sit at the back of the class that would never speak, it was a massive barrier to them to impact their learning. They were already terrified, didn't want to speak out, and now they've got another barrier to engaging their learning. Communication problems were impossible. I'm going to be honest with you, most of the time when we were in school, we took them off because we couldn't hear each other. They couldn't hear us, we couldn't hear them. You're in schools to learn, and the damage that they have done to my generation has been unbelievable. Like, I sat there in August.
The damage what's done?
That they've done to the rest of our lives, to our education. I sat there in August and literally watched my future crumble in front of my eyes.
Tell me why.
Well, they cancelled my exams. So I got my exams cancelled once, went back and thought, no, you know what, this is not on. I'm not getting screwed over by the algorithm. I'm better than this. Got there, they cancelled them again, and I thought, nothing I can do anymore. So this makes me so angry. It literally ruined our lives. And nobody spoke about it at all. And the commentators, they had union reps come on and say, this is what the school should have put in place. And they didn't care about what this did to us. And this is the first time I've ever spoken about it on TV because I knew that I'd cry about it. But I literally watched and felt like my entire life was falling apart because of what this government did to young people, and nobody cares. Not one person has cared about children in this pandemic. They think, oh, let's throw... Why are we putting masks on them when people can go to football stadiums and they can go to theatres and play Nadeem Zahawi sitting there at the teaching awards with no mask, and yet we're disrespecting kids? This pandemic will finish. The damage this has done for us is forever, and we'll never get it back.
So anyway, that's how I feel about it. I think it's not even controversial to say. People, especially probably younger people, I don't like to play the, oh, somebody please think of the kids card. That's certainly part of it, but lives have been ruined by all of this stuff, which would be a problem even in and of itself, but it becomes that much more hard to swallow when we find out more and more each day that all of these life ruining policies, and even if it's not like fully ruining your life, just even if it's just annoying at the very least, doesn't even help. It's not even like we really are trading our freedom for safety, because there is no safety with any of this stuff. Cloth masks for sure don't work. N95s, I've been saying since I followed the science back last year on this show, N95 masks can work, but only if they're like well fitted and worn properly, which is not really feasible. I have a beard, so I can't even. So you walk around everywhere, you can see even like the medical, like the rectangle ones. People do the weird thing where they like crisscross the loops, which makes like a puffy, like a huge hole in the side. I mean, this is an airborne virus. The droplets thing was like an early theory that I think you can catch COVID if you happen to catch somebody's spit in your mouth. But that's not what's driving this. It's airborne. It's been aerosolized. Unless you have an amazing mask that's well fitted with no air leaks, you're breathing out all this all around the edges. And if you've got a cloth mask, you're just going through it. So all of this stuff that we're having to put up with, it doesn't even help. So I can't wait for the politicians to come up with an excuse and to pat themselves on the back and be able to say, you know what, we did it. We're through this. I don't know how long that's going to take or what's going to need to happen. People are talking about, like, people are frustrated that their kids aren't in school. I have mixed feelings about that because, they're being propagandized less, but, you know, parents need their free babysitter. So, and hopefully more people have decided to homeschool their children. So, I don't know. I know their kids are missing out on, like, the social stuff, and nobody wants to do anything on Zoom unless they absolutely have to. But that was the focus of, like, today's media update. Dominic Carty, who looks more and more like an evil supervillain every time that I see him. Just something's off about that guy. Just he's got a look to him. They're talking about, yep, they're sending the kids back to school next week, probably. And, you know, there's some people that are happy about that. Some people are freaking out about it. The big justification, there's like, we're going to put HEPA filters in is the new thing, which, again, that seems to make sense. I know, like, air circulation is important factor in COVID. That's why you really, any kind of a mandate for being outside in the open is ridiculous. The public health has just destroyed all of their credibility, so it's hard to really get a vibe on taking anything that they say seriously. So I want to know, like, do HEPA filters work for COVID? And everything that I found was like, yes, but it's coming from the same dubious nonsense that's talking about, like, cloth masks, that's the way to go. And if HEPA filters did work, then why are we just getting around to that 2 years deep? I don't know how good they are at COVID. They must be better than just putting stupid plexiglass barriers everywhere. But I was trying to look up the research. I didn't. The furthest I got was there was like on the CDC website. They don't publish the actual scientific studies. They have like basically like a high school essay about the research. There's citations, so at some point I'm going to need to go in and click on those links. But I noticed the wording of it was odd, which is the same oddness that when I was researching about, like, masks and all that stuff, where they'll say, like, and this is all, like, simulations in a lab, which does not really match up to the real world, but they're saying, like, HEPA filters reduce the overall exposure by 65%. With no masks. But then they say, no HEPA filters, but with masks, 72% reduced combined mean aerosol concentration. And then they're like, and, you know, and two HEPA filters plus masks, 90% reduction in overall exposure. So what that's trying to convey is HEPA filters, even without masks, are 65% awesome. Masks, even without filters, are even more awesome. Just masks, 72% amazing. Now, HEPA filter plus masks, 90%. But the wording of it jumps out at me. They're not really comparing apples to apples. It's not like, here's the metric, and this one's this percentage, and this is this percentage, and this is this percentage. They use a different way of explaining each of those three numbers. The 65% no masks is reduce overall exposure. When they talk about no HEPA filters with masks, reduce combined mean aerosol concentration. And then two filters and a mask is 90% overall exposure. So, well, I guess that one's the same. So 65%, I mean, first off, if the masks or not is creating double digit differences in the effectives, that seems dubious. But there's just like a lot of these word games that are going on stuff. And I mean, even within their stuff, and they're like, and it works best when it's near the source of the aerosol. So basically the HEPA filters are like, if you've got the thing right in front of the kid's face, then it's pretty good. Now, if it's in a room, I mean, I can't imagine that we don't have any schools anywhere on Earth that have HEPA filters. I mean, instead of this lab simulation nonsense, which has led to every bad policy they've come up with, why don't we look at school A has HEPA filters, school B has no HEPA filters. Compare apples to apples. But instead, they're doing these weird lab experiments. I mean, you can't on purpose give people COVID, but I mean, these lab experiments, for the same reason that people were washing their groceries in April 2020, these are the same nonsense where they say that masks are amazing when they put it on a robot that fits perfect. I mean, I don't know. Everybody's screeching about Joe Rogan disinformation, but he's not always right. I don't think he's presenting himself as some like authority on the thing. He's having conversations. We talked about this a bit last week, but the real saddest thing about this whole deal is we are not all epidemiologists. We need, it's helpful to have a media and a public health authority that can kind of do the work for us and put that into layman's terms that we can understand. But we've been lied to and exaggerations were made constantly. So you can't really trust these people. So you either need to just believe everything that a government employee with a lab coat says unquestioningly, even though every day we're finding out a new thing was wrong. And it's not like the science changed, so therefore this is what we think now. It's all arbitrary. Whenever they change from one thing to something else, it's always like the dubious connecting of the dots. It's not like they're like, well, in the early days of the pandemic, like, okay, and 100 years prior, masks don't work. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, masks are the number one awesome thing. And then they're like, well, how come you said that? Oh, well, we just said that because we didn't want everybody buying them and not have healthcare people get access to them. It's just, it's all nonsense and very not scientific. And it's hard to find good information because you don't know who are the lunatics that are making up stuff, who are the people kind of toeing the party line that are getting their talking points from the government. And it's tough. Now, being able to sit down and listen to somebody talk eloquently for 3 hours, that helps. Adds a little bit of a bullshit detector there. But anyway, the whole thing is messed up. I hope we get back to normal. I don't know how long or ever, but the whole world has been broken because of this thing, and I don't like it one bit. Thank you for listening to St. John Forward Radio. Good night.